From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
This is Money Talk for March 8th, 2019. The St. Patrick's Day Parade steps off Saturday morning in downtown Milwaukee. And if you oversleep, you can catch the Wauwatosa St. Patrick's Day Parade at 3:30 on Blue Mound. And also Saturday afternoon, Marquette wraps up the season with Georgetown at the Forum. Well, a forger in West Virginia, ironically named James Justice, had what he thought was a great plan to get out of prison. He forged a pardon for himself. But you know what they say about the best laid plans of mice and criminals? Let me count the ways this plan went sideways. He didn't use official government stationery. He used an obviously fake West Virginia state seal. And finally, his pardon was riddled with spelling and grammatical errors. But because this is West Virginia, he almost got away with it. And here's just an observation. Following a recent study that found left-handers make 90 cents on the dollar versus right-handers, and women make 80 cents on the dollar versus men, so where does that leave left-handed women? Well, the answer is they should marry left-handed baseball players like Bryce Harper because they make a boatload of money. My wife checked into baseball's new $330 million man to see if he's married, and she's not even left-handed. In the studio today, we have Kyle Tedding, Dave Sandstrom, Paige Radke, Joel Dreesang, and wrapping up the week, here's Bob Landis.
Thanks, Max. Pretty disappointing week. Market sold off all week long. NASDAQ lost 2.7%, falling 204 points to close at 73.92. The broader markets, the S&P 500, shed 2.2%, losing 61 points to close at 27.43. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average lost 2.5% this week, shedding 644 points. We closed at the bell this afternoon in New York with the Dow finishing the week at 25,383. Year to date, still doing really good. NASDAQ up 11.6. S&P is up 9.8%. This includes dividends. And the Dow is up a stellar 9.3%. You know, Kyle, the market just took off January and February. It seems that reality is setting in here a little bit, that we had disappointing news out of Europe, that Europe is now trying to stimulate their economy. Pretty different than the talk last month that they would be changing and potentially raising rates. So the market didn't like that. And I think that markets are reacting to, maybe got a little bit ahead of themselves with the trade news. A lot of people were expecting some announcement this week that they had resolved a lot of trade issues, and nothing happened on that front. So now we're backing and filling, waiting for new news about the Fed and the trade war.
Yeah, and let's not forget, Bob, also that first quarter earnings now forecasts aren't looking all that great, and so you're putting a couple of pieces together this week to say that, you know, maybe when we started the year, stocks were considerably cheap, but you put 2 months of pretty strong run together, and all of a sudden you're talking about stocks that, again, were more or less fairly valued. And so in a week in which the news about the future was just more uncertainty, maybe not anything that's terrible, but certainly some more questions about where we're headed, and without any real resolution, you know, it's no wonder stocks were down a little bit this week. And I think the good news there is that we've had such a good start to the year that we've got a little bit of a cushion from where we were.
Kyle, 25 years ago, Alan Greenspan raised interest rates 7 times, 1994. And it was the first year that most folks heard the concept of soft landing. And it's interesting that that's now being trotted out, that some economists are predicting a shallow recession starting late next year as the effects of the tax cuts start wearing off. But there is another side to that story, which is, you know, maybe if the Fed is in fact done raising interest rates, the unsettling effects of higher rates start wearing off, and it could continue to slow the economy down without putting us into a downturn. Soft landing, of course, is we don't go negative. We just slightly touch the runway and then take off again.
Yeah, Bob, we're also talking about a Fed balance sheet that's probably going to be larger than what we initially thought it was. And so you might have some more accommodative Fed even just on that side of the coin than what we were otherwise talking about. And so I think very early to say what we're talking about in terms of economic growth at the end of next year, but I think it's reasonable to at least entertain the idea that the economy might not get as bad as many consider. And I think the one piece that investors should prepare for is that whether it's the soft landing or whether it's a little bit harder of a recession, that it might persist for a little while, that we aren't necessarily going to see something that's steep but quick. We might see something that's shallow but that lasts for a little bit longer. Just because the Fed doesn't have as many tools at their disposal this time around, just because, I think we're not dealing with a financial crisis likely this time. We're dealing with something else that pushes us into recession. And so, I think it's fair to say that while that soft landing is certainly a possibility, it's just one of many directions we could head.
It'd be interesting to see if they could pull off that soft landing, Kyle, with the very slow and level approach that the Fed took coming up to this point. Bob, you mentioned Greenspan's efforts in 94. That was a very abrupt situation where he kind of blindsided the market, and bond holders were the suffered quite a bit during that time frame. This time around, I think they've done a good job on a slower approach. Bond holders have managed that storm pretty well. So if they can actually pull that soft landing off, I think it might be remarkable.
I think it's really interesting to see what's been happening in the Treasury markets, with the 10-year yield coming down, with the 2-year yield coming down. I mean, that tells you that nobody expects robust economic growth moving forward. And then at the same time, the market's up almost 10% on average. So somebody's wrong. You can't have it both ways. Either the economy's doing great, the stocks are going to do great, and earnings are going to be strong, or the bond market is seeing through the haze and saying, not sure there's going to be much growth, much inflation, which tells me that maybe there's a third story, which is more of the same. We had pretty good economic growth here the last 8 years and very low inflation because of globalization, the Amazon effect, and other effects. So maybe we are in this new world of pretty good growth without much inflation. Paige, let's bring you into the show. What do you think about current events?
So there's a lot of things going on right now, obviously. We still have all the uncertainties that we're looking at. But I think right now with the market, there's four main things that are driving the market in the short term. We have the Federal Reserve. We have weak economic growth coming out of China. We have the U.S.-China trade disputes. And we have slower corporate earnings. So combining all those things, it seems like the main drivers of the market are a little bit more on the bearish side. So in the short term, I'd expect to see a little bit more volatility, and I think investors need to be ready for that. Any surprises on the upside, we might see a little pop, but again, that'll probably be more in the short term. So I think now is a really good time to reassess your portfolios and make sure you de-risked as much as you can, so you can weather a little bit more of a bumpy ride.
Let's talk a little bit more about the slowdown in China. Every single year, Paige, I start the year reading reports about, the wheels could really fall off the cart in China now, and only to see that they pull some other rabbit out of their hat, stimulate their economy, and get past the speed bumps. Ultimately, the wolf's going to be at the door. Ultimately, they're going to have to pay the price for all that money they spent on infrastructure, that some of it turned out to be unnecessary, all the empty apartments and all. But why I bring this up is, this time around, it really did spill into the emerging markets, and that seems to be spreading now. Germany is teetering on recession because their exports to China have just fallen off a cliff almost. And you're well-versed in this, but, we haven't, up till now, ever had a recession in the U.S. that started overseas, but you got to be a little bit nervous about the weakness overseas, particularly with what came out in Europe this week. And then to question, when does that start nipping at the heels of the United States?
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, with the European Central Bank, as we said, they went from just in December saying they were going to stop their bond buying. And then 2 months later, they flipped the switch and went back to some more easy monetary policy. So definitely watching the European Union right now. And like you said, that combined with China and, you know, all across the globe, while typically recessions start here in the U.S., we seem to be on some pretty good footing. So there is a good chance that that slower exports out of the U.S. is going to, you know, be a bigger cause than some of the more domestic things that we've been watching.
Mm-hmm. Joel, let's bring you into the show. 20,000 new jobs created. Not sure what an analyst does for a living when they forecast 176,000 new jobs would be created, and they came up with 20,000. Not even close there, Joel.
Yeah, Bob, and that was, you know, I mean, there were analysts who were predicting a lot more jobs than that. And I, you know, I always kind of wonder who these analysts are and why so much is put on their predictions for, you know, what happens in 1 month's government report. And, you know, every week we look at these reports and we say, you know, don't put a lot of stock into 1 month's report. And yet it seems, especially with that jobs report, the jobs report is a big teller of what's going on in the economy. And when the numbers come up short, as they did today, the stock markets take notice and they say, uh-oh, something's wrong.
It's hard to argue, though, Joel, with the track record of this current employment situation. I mean, I don't know if it gets enough credit, but we had 100 consecutive months of adding jobs in this country.
101 now, yeah.
Yeah. So, and I mean, when you look at the next closest streak that we ever had at 48, that's a remarkable streak. And,
right.
You know, I think it's expanding now to, you know, wage gains now we're finally starting to see. There was all this talk a year ago how the Phillip curve was broken and we weren't getting that wage growth even though unemployment was below 4%. But we're starting to see some reasonable gains in wages. We're starting to see it trickle all the way down to the lower levels of the economy. We see minority groups now that have reached lowest unemployment in the history of their particular situation. So when you look at an economy like ours, where 70% of that is driven by consumer spending, and we have record numbers of people working, and those wages are going up, that gives us pretty good support.
Yeah, Dave, so year to year, the average wage went up 3.4% from last February. And so it's now 5 months in a row that those wage gains have been greater than 3%. That hasn't happened for a decade. So that's a good sign. You know, some of the reasons, I mean, remember that there were a lot of states, I think there were 18 states this year that raised their minimum wage. So that's helping out too. But, you know, we've had such a tight labor market for so long that you gotta hope that that's starting to increase the wages for workers.
And Joel, we look at employment quite a bit, but the other side of that is also the wealth effect and how wealthy people feel. And we saw data this week on household net worth. And while it took a big step back in the fourth quarter, simply because of market returns in the fourth quarter, still 80% higher than where we were at the bottom of the financial crisis, you know, first quarter of 2009. I mean, you're talking about households that really haven't grown their liabilities all that much. Remember that net worth is assets minus liabilities. So you've got households that really haven't grown their liabilities all that much, and yet they're far wealthier than they were before. And so I think that speaks to, A, you know, the employment picture, where now you can see some more spending, you can see some more household formation, and then B, those households that are already formed, they have more money available. And yeah, maybe there's some discrepancy between where that money is going. A lot of it is going towards those that already have a higher net worth. But at the same time, you know, that's money in the economy that could be spent.
And Kyle, you know, that also hits at what Dave was talking about, the consumer spending. And you know, think about your own personal situation, and you're more likely to spend money if you've got a good job and you feel good about your prospects for your job. You're not going to lose it anytime soon. You're expecting, you know, an increase in pay or whatever. But there's that also that wealth effect, more psychological of, you know, my stock portfolio looks like it's better, or if I'm not looking at my stock portfolio, I see that stocks are up, you know, and I know that I have stocks in my portfolio, and that's, you know, that's going to make me feel wealthier too.
You know, Kyle, you wonder about the potential for a significant increase in capital spending, business spending. You know, part of the tax law, the tax cut for corporations, was intended to encourage businesses to grow organically. outside the oil and gas industry. It didn't happen. Companies were sitting on their money, and a lot of them were saying that there's too much uncertainty because of the trade conflict. So the point is, if we get some of these trade issues resolved, could free up companies to start increasing their capital spending. But along with that, I wonder, with the rapid introduction of artificial intelligence into industry, into the service economy, at what point do we really start enjoying productivity gains? It's got to come. We know it's coming. So the combination of productivity gains and a significant increase in capital spending could potentially be the next leg in the market. You know, sometimes it gets hard to look past the near term, and it won't be tomorrow, it won't be the next month, but, you know, with augmented reality, machine learning, artificial intelligence, it's not something they're just talking about, it's happening. And as the pressure builds for everybody to start spending money in those areas, number one, it tells me that you're going to see a nice increase in capital spending. That can have a huge increase in economic activity. And as we all know, the only way to increase aggregate net worth is to have everybody be more productive. So we could be looking at this wonderful confluence of increase in business spending, capital spending, and an increase in productivity growth. And it's just an educated guess on my part, but that could be the next leg here.
And Bob, I'm always amazed by the stories I hear of, the technology that was created that 10 years ago, no one had any idea that it was ever even something that was going to come along, and the changes that that can make to the way that business is done, to the way that products are made, to, just the way that the economy works more broadly. And so, you mentioned things like augmented reality. I'm always struck by, the stories we hear now about the skills gap, for example, about how a lot of the jobs that are out there we don't have skills for. And, things like augmented reality certainly could help to solve some of that problem. Maybe you don't know exactly how to fix that Pratt & Whitney engine on that airplane, but you've got the schematics up on augmented reality in front of you that tell you here's the screw you've got to turn to, the pressure you've got to tighten it to. And so, some of the things we can see, but then also think about all those things we haven't thought of yet that could potentially lead to productivity gains down the road. And I think you're spot on that the one challenge we have is that that's going to take some significant capital expenditure. And until we really start to see that significant capital expenditure, it just delays the production of that technology. It delays the productivity gains that we can see. And so I'll be encouraged when we can see some resolution to the uncertainty. I'll be encouraged when we can see corporations start to put some of that money to work in research and development rather than strictly in share buybacks and dividends, because long term, that's what drives revenue growth. That's what drives earning growth. It's what drives profits, not simply buying back shares. And so, there's so much opportunity out there to be encouraged about.
So many jobs that exist now didn't exist 100 years ago. And a lot of people are freaked out about artificial intelligence because they think, all right, we're all going to get replaced by robots. And you consider in 1900, 40% of Americans worked on farms. It's less than 2% now, right? Because we got really good at growing food. And they say that half of all jobs that exist today won't exist 50 years from now. All right, that's fine. But remember what I just said. The vast majority of jobs that exist today didn't exist 50 years ago. So we'll see this huge disruption, but it's only a matter of time, in my opinion, before companies have to spend vast sums of money to embrace all this great technology. And I think it's a sleeper. I think it's going to surprise a lot of people, and all of a sudden we're going to wake up one day and look at productivity rates that are substantially higher than they are today. Well, folks, that's the end of yet another Money Talk. We enjoyed doing the show. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.